Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
It's Graham. We're back. Another episode from Edinburgh. I'm keeping my voice down because I'm having to record episodes on the hoof. On the hoof. Into my little microphone, just stood outside in Edinburgh. I've been in Scotland for like a week. We've had a few specials and we're going to be running some episodes with some of the really interesting people at the Edinburgh Fringe 2026 up until the end of the festival, which is sadly in a week. But today, got a really good episode lined up for you. And some great chats this week as well, as we bring Outcast World to you live from the Fringe. My guest today is bringing you something that I promise you have never seen before, and I don't say that lightly, because when the press release landed on my desk describing a drag circus horror comedy about a queer performer road tripping through Australian outback to audition for Kylie Minogue, encountering chainsaw-wielding bush rangers and slasher villains along the way, my first thought was somebody lost their mind. Now, having been on a road trip myself recently, not in Australia, but through the Badlands of Scotland, the Highlands, I kind of felt like it really fitted. So I thought, I've got to speak to the person who's done the show immediately. The show is called Final Queen, and it opened to 4 stars on its first preview, and the person behind it, and inside the frock, covered head to toe in fake blood every night, is Harrison Sweeney. He trained in aerial rope and hula hoops. Yeah, which tells you everything about why this show is the way it is. And underneath all the camp and all the gore, ignore that chicken there, underneath all the gore, I can't believe there's a chicken near me. There is a genuinely moving argument about queer survival and about... I am in Edinburgh. This is insane. That was a cockerel. Underneath all of the... That wasn't a sound effect, but that was a genuine cockerel. Underneath all the gore, there's a genuinely moving argument about what we call queer survival, about who the real monsters are, and about the drag queen. Yeah, as the ultimate final girl. We caught up after the opening night, so he was still riding the high, and honestly, this is one of my favourite conversations of the whole Fringe. I'm moving away from these chickens. This is my chat with Harrison Sweeney, who is the person behind, one of the two people behind. I've closed the door here. This is madness. Closing this door here in this echoey room. But yeah, he basically made the show with his longtime theatre sort of partner. And it's just a mad idea. Here's my chat with Harrison for Outcast World.
Queer politics.
When Farage says jump, Labour might say how high.
And it's not true. It's offering people false hope.
Sex.
Dating apps have become a breeding ground for the worst of human behaviours.
And culture.
What do you want, home? We get together with something simple. It's simple for me.
He will, like, go nosh himself off.
This is Outcast World.
So you've arrived. You are at the Fringe. It all started last night. How was it and how are you feeling?
The show went really well. I was really, really happy with it. We had a great audience. I think for a first preview, you know, we were running really well. All the technical elements went really, really smoothly. I couldn't be happier, really, after a first preview.
Good. Was the press in there last night? There would have been last night, wouldn't there?
Yeah, we had a reviewer in last night who just published a review, 4 stars. So feeling
amazing.
Really, really pleased with everything, yeah.
Do you ever feel like going over to them and going, why wasn't it 5? Give me another star.
I do say that, and it's like the first one up, and you're like, come on, what was the difference? What's the line
tell
there?
Tell me.
So I think some of the jokes were a bit too Australian for them, perhaps. So
okay, right, all right. There's always something, you know, when it's like that, the extra star, it's always something very specific. I had Leila Navabi on like 6 weeks ago, and she was saying how Time Out gave her 4 stars out of 5 because she fell over during the performance. And she was like, and it was written, I really would have been 5, but Leila did fall over, and it cracked me up, honestly. So for anyone who hasn't seen the poster of you covered in blood on a farm gate, this is the correct description, isn't it?
That's me.
It's unlike anything I think I've ever heard described. It belongs at the Fringe. Tell us about the show.
Yeah, so the show is called Final Queen. It's a drag circus horror comedy. We're inspired by Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And we wanted to mesh those two things together. My co-creator, Rachel Carey, pitched this idea to me originally about a year ago and said, what if there was a drag queen on a road trip and encountering all of these different monsters and slasher villains, and every different one of them was a different circus act. And so that was sort of the initial idea. And I thought, yeah, that sounds insane.
It does sound insane.
Yeah, yeah. It was a crazy, crazy rehearsal process trying to think of all these different things. And I mean, it was crazy, but it was so much fun playing with all these different ideas and trying to see how they would fit together and how we could turn all those different things into a cohesive show. So we've ended up with Grace Lightning and her 2 drag friends on a road trip through the outback, off to meet Kylie Minogue and audition for her and her world tour. And then they get horribly lost in the outback and end up in this old abandoned farmhouse where they encounter all manner of villains and chainsaw wielding bush rangers and spooky ghosts and all sorts of things, and have to fight their way out. We'll see who will survive, you know?
It's a hell of an elevator pitch, isn't it? Like, when you explain it to people, it's like, bear with me, right? Okay. People must have thought that this is madness, but I love it. Which came first, the drag or the horror?
Oh, interesting. I think so. Rachel and I have worked before together on some projects, and she's a real horror comedy expert. That's her thing, and we've done some horror comedy shows together. We met about 9 years ago when we were at drama school together, and it was only during lockdown that I started doing drag. And so I guess the horror came first in that respect, and then Rachel's like, you do drag, what if we do these, what if we combine them together and mash them up? So yeah, she's definitely the horror guru on the show, and I'm the drag guru, I suppose. We're meshing our worlds in that regard.
It's gonna sound a bit mad. Did she have a background in horror, or just a lot of interest in films?
It's just her passion. So she's a film director and theatre director, and her specialisation is horror comedy, theatre, and film. So we've worked together on shows like Alice in Slasherland, which is this like demonic sort of loose parody of Alice in Wonderland, about the devil coming to the world and destroying everything. We've done things with like lesbian vampires and country western singers, all sorts of crazy silly horror ideas. So we've worked in that genre for a while.
So it's fascinating as you go through the other stuff that you've done. That comes from a very specific mind, doesn't it? And this is a very specific genre, but the direction you've gone down makes perfect sense to me. So Grace Lightning is described as the love child of the final girl trope, a queer circus performer and a camp Aussie drag queen. Sydney Prescott as a backup dancer for Kylie in a lace front. Where did she come from?
So Grace was my drag persona that emerged during lockdown as sort of, just an expression of gender and performance for myself. I think, you know, everyone sort of had their coping mechanism, survival mechanism during lockdown, and with all this free time we had. And so mine was to begin playing with drag. And so she was originally just as a, you know, expression for myself. And then when we started working on the show, we thought, okay, well, now we need to flesh out this character a little bit more. So she kind of emerged as a combination of all the things that I would want from my drag character, which is the Kylie Minogue backup dancer, the circus performer, real Australian drag queen, Aussie humor, all of that. And then also fitting her into the context of the show. And we wanted to really explore that final girl trope, which is the, you know, the resilience, the battler, the survivor, which I think lends itself really well to drag queens. You know, there's a lot of, we found there was a lot of parallels there, drag queens and queer people, you know, in society. So it was a sort of a natural fit that those two things came, or those, all the things came together.
I'm feeling, I mean, I know you said it's Texas Chainsaw Massacre meets Priscilla Queen of the Desert, but I'm really feeling Priscilla Queen of the Desert come right through this. I mean, that must have been, as someone who's in drag in Australia, Priscilla Queen of the Desert would have been Nirvana in terms of, it's the creative genesis of all of this, isn't it? Of all of the sort of drag stuff in Australia. Talk me through how much of this road trip at Venomous Snakes, Bush Rangers with Chainsaws. Have you ever seen I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, the British TV show where they go to Australia for the summer? They kind of trade on the same sort of Australian tropes. And how much of that is exaggerated Australia? And how much of it is just like, that's just Australia?
I think it's interesting. It's something we talked about a bit during the creation of the show, because it was really important to me that we make this a very Australian show, and we do it in a way that celebrates Australian culture and doesn't sort of make fun of it or put it down. But we were also aware that we're presenting this to an international audience. And I've lived in the UK for a few years now, and knowing what the British view of Australia is, I thought it would be fun to play with that. And, you know, I have so many friends who say, like, oh, I'd love to go to Australia, but I just couldn't handle all the spiders or the bugs. And I think,
yeah,
like,
that's something I'd say.
Yeah, you're not like sitting in a cafe batting away snakes and spiders, you know, like,
it's not a bush tucker trial. No,
exactly. And I've not seen any of the UK I'm a Celebrity, but I have heard that it's happening in the Australian outback. And I thought, oh gosh, okay, that's the view of Australia internationally. So I think there's something fun about leaning into that and playing with the whole view of Australia, stereotypical view of Australia. So we sort of do make fun of that a little bit. There's a moment in the show where she turns around, there's this giant spider on her face, which always gets a great reaction from the audience, because it sort of just appears out of nowhere. And I always hear like a
no way.
And that's something that's really fun to play with, that view of Australia, because that's not really the reality, but that's what everyone thinks.
Have you never woken up with a giant spider on your face as an Aussie? I always think every Australian at some point wakes up with a tarantula right on the nose or something. I don't know. I've not been, and I want to go, and I need to.
You should. It's the kind of thing that you know, if you're out in the bush or something and you go to the bathroom at night, you do just have to lift the toilet seat up and check and all of that sort of stuff. So you just, you know, or you check your shoes before you put them on if you've left them outside.
I do this anyway. This is a total tangent, but as a kid I read a book about spiders, so I would be less scared of spiders, right? And actually it left me with a lifelong fear of spiders, because I knew all about them and how bad some of them are, and I still can't use the toilet without checking under it, like I'm in Australia, and I shake my shoes, and I live in Southeast London, so I don't know, there's something going on there. The tagline asks who the real monsters are. What's the answer bearing in mind we want people to see it as well, what's the answer that you want people leaving with?
Ooh, that is a great question. I think we use that tagline to get people to think about, you know, the broader implications, I guess, of the show. And it's not a really explicitly political show making a comment, but I think there's always a bit of a comment in queer art. Drag is inherently political, and I think looking at you know, these parallels of the drag queen and as the final girl, and what we sort of have to do as queer people to survive in a world that increasingly is, you know, turning the tide against us. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of progress recently and then in some ways, and then a lot of, you know, pushback and the fight's getting harder. So I think drawing people's attention to that and doing it in a fun and campy way with circus and fake blood and all of that. Yeah, and just getting to think about like what else is out there, you know, and less about the specific monsters themselves and more about what it's actually like for a queer person navigating the world and that experience. So I think that's what I think I would like the audience to consider. We don't necessarily answer any of those questions.
You don't have to, though, do you?
The point of art. No, exactly.
Yeah. You've literally, my little interview plan here, some people then answer my next four questions with the quality of their answer. You've just literally wiped out the next four. But yeah, the final girl as one of like horror and popular culture's most enduring archetypes, and horror and queerness kind of, why do you think horror and queerness end up sometimes in this kind of way? Like it's a mad idea, but it also works, doesn't it? Why?
I think there's something, it's interesting, like when I was preparing for the show and doing a bunch of research and reading about like the history of the slasher film and when they were first sort of made in the 60s and 70s, they were very, they were considered such a low form of art. Like, you know, you go to the movies and you see something that makes you scream. It was like, oh, that's not considered highbrow art or like,
movies, the B movie, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is also very true of queer films and queer performance. And also, interestingly enough, circus. You know, 100 years ago, circus was very much on the outcast of society and wasn't seen as this, you know, incredible art form that I think it is today. So it sort of is interesting in a way that like all of those things have that shared history. What was your question? It was about horror.
Yeah, how was I sometimes don't ask questions, I ask about four condensed into one. Horror and queerness, you're on the way to answering that.
There was sort of like this I mean, you look at someone like John Waters who has combined those sorts of ideas and this sort of like out there very, very horrific, shocking sort of thing. He's not making slasher films, but there is that sort of energy in that queer art. I think, yeah, there's just that sort of the societal view of those two art forms was very interesting to me, that those that was how they were viewed in society and wanting to sort of connect them and sort of honor the origins of these genres in Final Queen.
Is Grace surviving the Outback, is that like a metaphor for something you feel like you've lived, or is it just a fun story?
Oh, I don't think it's an intentional metaphor. I feel like, I mean, again, I wanted to make this a very Australian story because that's important to me as an Australian artist, and I wanted to celebrate Australian culture. It's probably one of those things, if I really look back at the show, I can be like, oh, okay, yeah, I wonder if this was, you know.
This isn't a therapy session, but yeah, sometimes you don't realize, do you? Yeah.
Exactly. Totally. I think also like making the show, I mean, it's a solo show and it's just me, and I wanted to sort of combine all of the things that I can do and sort of, in a way, show off all of my many talents and just be like, you know, I can do a bit of this, can do a bit of that. Let's put everything in there. So
yes,
there is a lot of me in this show. So I think that I just, again, that I'll come back to that resilience of queer people surviving in the world and sort of pushing through and battling against everything that they've had to endure. I think that would be, that's sort of the main metaphor for Grace and her experience in the Outback and pushing through and I think continuing to push through even when it is scary. There is a moment where one of the other drag characters says to Grace, you know, we should just turn back. Like, it's this is not safe. We've got to go back to Sydney and then sort of give up on everything. And Grace says, no, we've got to keep going. You know, that's what it's all about. We've got to keep fighting and keep pushing, keep chasing our dreams. So I think that's definitely something I believe in.
I mean, drag is under genuine political attack, as are queer people all over the world, really. And I guess taking a drag queen, arming her against monsters and making her the survivor feels like a real statement in 2026. You are bringing Australian drag to an international stage. The international stage has thankfully seen some people who are trailblazers in Australian drag. We've seen them. People know them. Priscilla Queen of the Desert doing a lot of the sort of cultural heavy lifting there. What is distinct in your opinion about Australian drag versus the UK drag that we see on Drag Race UK that audiences here are more familiar with?
I think there's a real sense of humour in Australian drag. I think that's sort of our defining quality. This sort of like fun, cheeky Aussie larrikin style. I mean, you know, it's always hard to sort of classify an entire genre of art as this is what it is. But I think that definitely is that unique, that's the unique quality that makes it Australian. The ability to laugh at yourself, I think, is a very, very unique Australian quality. Something that we all sort of share in, and as much as we can make fun of you and him and her and anyone else, like, we can make fun of ourselves. And that's, Grace definitely does that in the show.
As you were saying before, you were like, I wanted to do a show where I could just basically show off. And when artists do that and they go, well, I'm good at these things, so I'm going to do that. I'm like, well, yeah, it's your fucking show. You trained at what's NICA? I don't know what that is.
The National Institute of Circus Arts in Melbourne.
Right. Okay. You trained in aerial rope and hula hoops. Then you did musical theatre. Your whole life's been leading up to this, really. At what point did you think, I'm going to combine the rope stuff, you know, all of that, the hula hoops, going to stick in a chainsaw? Did that only really happen when you got together with your creative partner that you've worked on the show on from when you were at college?
I guess, she initially pitched this idea to me a couple years ago and was like, you should do this solo show. And I was like, solo show? Terrifying. So then I sort of was like, you know, maybe one day. And I think it was about a year and a half ago, start of last year, that I just was like, I don't think I'm ever going to feel 100% ready for a solo show. But how I really want to make something. How can you, you know? And again, this, I think, is brings back to what I'm saying about like constantly fighting and pushing and, you know, always battling, that you just go, you know, the best time to do it is now. You know, you're never going to feel ready. You've just got to throw yourself into it. And I've learned so much from the process. But yes, I think in a way, my whole life has been leading to this moment and this show, because I have trained in many different things. I've done circus school, I've done music theater school, I've trained as a, you know, performer in many different genres. So to be able to combine everything is really exciting for me, Harrison, as an artist. Yeah. And yes, there's the ego and showing off and being like, look at all these amazing things I can do. But
with
also
the chainsaw,
with the chainsaw, because why not, you know? to combine those things in a way that I think, you know, I don't think I've really seen this sort of thing before.
I have never heard of anything like this. I love it.
You know, I've seen a lot of like drag circus stuff before. We see a lot of horror comedy. We see a lot of drag horror. You know, that's a really big thing at the moment, has been for a while. So there's been elements of this sort of stuff that have been floating around. I said, I'll have a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of that, and sort of.
But it's working, isn't it? Like, not like I read the press release and I was like, sounds quite mental. But also, nothing about it creatively jars, does it? Somehow, this works conceptually. Can I ask? Obviously, going to be a lot of fake blood. night after night, you must be going through litres of that fucking stuff. I mean, what does it do? What does it do to, like, the costumes, like the cleaning bill? Is someone going around with a Henry Hoover at the end of the night, just getting all the whatever it is you use for blood? Is it tomato sauce? I need to know.
We use a stage fake blood. I actually do not know what it's made from, so I have no hope to. It's just fake blood. I try get it mostly on myself, knowing that it is a fringe venue and we do have, you know, there's shows happening immediately after us and we have to pack up and get out of there quickly. I did want to make a mess on stage. That was one of the things I said to Rachel when we set out to make the show. I was like, I want to start with a nice empty stage and then by the end, it's just an absolute mess. Apologies to the stage management team and also a massive thank you because they're getting straight in there with the brooms and the hoovers and everything else. Yeah. In terms of cleaning, it is me and my dress over the sink for every show, scrubbing out the fake blood. It washes out amazingly.
Does it? Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's stage blood. Again, I don't know what it's made of. But
I mean, it has to, doesn't it? It has to wash out, doesn't it? I guess, but I don't know. I've never really considered the operations of gore on stage. Yeah. I just thought maybe come up, dress straight in the washing machine, that kind of thing. But no, you're scrubbing it by hand, and I respect that.
Yeah, it doesn't come off skin easily. It comes off the white dress, like just with water. But I'm in the shower, like scrubbing and trying to get it off
so. Every night.
Yeah.
You're doing this solo. You want 6 nights a week? A month for a month. You get a couple of days off, don't you? You're off on the 24th. Isn't that a dark day for everyone, the 24th?
I've got the 17th and the 24th off here at Edinburgh. So it's 24 shows in 26 days. So it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the physical toll on the body of six performances a week, 6 nights a week of, like, that's high intensity, isn't it? What does the kind of physical toll of a fringe run like that or that kind of run feel like, or do you not know yet?
I don't know yet. It's the simple answer to that. This is my first time performing at Edinburgh Fringe. So I'm excited and apprehensive of what the physical toll will be. But that is definitely one of the things that, you know, I learned at circus school when I was there at NICA. It's about looking after your body and making sure you're equipped to do, you know, 6 nights a week, 8 shows a week. And I've been blessed to have performed in other shows and do sort of long, intense runs. So I have had some experience of taking care of my body, but Fringe is a different beast, isn't it? There's a party to go to every night and there's sort of this feeling of I've got to go to the artist bar and network and I've got to be there handing out flyers and, you know, it can easily sort of add up. So I'm trying to make sure I'm looking after myself. I mean, it helps that I have to wash my dress after every show. So I'm going straight home to take care of that.
Yeah.
And then also making sure looking after my body, warming up, cooling down, all of that sort of stuff, not, you know, staying up into the wee hours and looking after myself.
The thing is, the nature of this kind of work is, some people nail it, don't they? I'm talking more about the networking bit where there is a certain kind of person. I've got a really good friend that does this. I was always shit at it. I can either go all out and end up a mess with problems, or I just sort of stay just focused entirely on my work. And one of my best friends can do both. She can stay out till 2, but know it's time to go to bed at such and such a point. She can network with the right people, get pissed at the right points and still keep the show on the road.
Yeah.
I can't do that. What are your plans in terms of, because the fringe part of it is literally being present around the agents and the people who are out and other performers, isn't it? I mean, how are you finding that so far?
I think I'm that sort of like theatre foyer networking has always been difficult for me. That's not a situation that I thrive in. So I think I'm
it's hard.
Yeah, I'm dealing. My approach is I have a lot of faith in the show and a lot of faith in the work, and I'm really hoping that it speaks for itself. And I'm finding the ways that I can network that work for me. So that's emailing people and inviting people to the show. And I always think that my success is like when you work with me, you get you get to see who I am when I'm working and when I'm on stage and when I'm backstage and all that sort of stuff. And that's when I find that I develop those connections more successfully.
Working with sort of people. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's one of the things that I love about theater and interesting. One of the things that I've decided to make this solo show and do it all on my own. And I've actually really missed the collaboration effort. I mean, I've got Rachel obviously, and we've been making this show together. So that's been really fun. But even going out there by myself every night is like, oh, where are my friends on stage?
Yeah, I know. I get that. Yeah.
So just finding the ways I think that like networking work for me and finding like what the strengths I have in that aspect. I think there's always, you always look at the people in the, you know, the parties and the foyers and the whatever else and be like, oh, they're doing so well with that. And I need to move it, be more like that. And I need to be like that. I think I've just found that like, if I'm doing the things that come naturally to me or the things that I'm interested in, then I find more success there and that's going to work better for me. And I'm going to attract the kinds of people who connect well with that.
I have a quick fire few questions and then you're free to go. All right, quick fire. Don't overthink them. Favorite horror film of all time and the one that made Final Queen possible? Scream. Okay. Kylie song you'd die to and the one you'd kill to. So that's two.
Oh, I would die to Dancing from Golden and I would kill to Get Out of My Way.
Perfect. Finish the sentence. Grace Lightning will survive anything except...
meeting Kylie Minogue.
All right, okay. And the final one, I think you should plug your show. Let everyone know where it is and how we can see it.
Come see Final Queen. We're on at 9:30 p.m. at Big Belly Cowgate in Edinburgh for the entire fringe till the 30th of August.
Sounds like it's going to be really good. Congrats on the show. I'm so pleased for you that it went good first night and that you're in a good frame of mind. This is, I guess people say this is the most stressful point, isn't it? It's the first day or so.
Yeah.
And you've survived.
Yeah. I got through. So here we go. Here's to a great season.
All right. Congrats. And thanks very much for coming on.
Harrison Sweeney there, me near the... Well, I was near chickens, you can hear them at the start of the show. People stay in all kinds of places over the fringe and I am just slightly outside of town. That is so funny. And one of the maddest things, first time I've ever been interrupted by a cock live on the podcast. So Harrison Sweeney there. Final Queen is on Big Belly Cowgate at 9:30 every night until the end of this week, and you'll be able to see her elsewhere around the world. So if you're anywhere near Edinburgh next few days, do yourself a favour, get a ticket, sell them Outcast World, tell them Outcast World sent you. I'm being put off by chickens. Before you go, a couple of things worth sticking around for later this week, next few days. In fact, I'm going to fire out the episodes from Edinburgh. I've got an absolute cracker of an exclusive for you, a chat with Gareth Waugh, who is a legend in Scottish comedy, and someone I know. There's a really interesting story behind this. Gareth did a show which is called Is Pepsi Okay? About a scam, a podcast related scam that he was at the receiving end on. And guess who else was at the receiving end of that sort of podcast scam? Little old me, back when we launched this show. I went one way, he went another way. And Gareth has now made this mad period of his and my life into a show at the Fringe, which, if you know the history of it, you're going to find out all about it. Have a look up Gareth's show, and it's impressive, it's mad, and he's a very funny man. And we're going to sit down just after he's come off stage tomorrow. I'm excited to see him in person and have a chat about that. So that's next time on Outcast World. We'll see you then from Edinburgh. Bye-bye.
Queer politics, sex and culture. Outcast World.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.